Over the weekend, former Tea Party Republican Congressman from Illinois, Joe Walsh, announced he was going to challenge Donald Trump for the party's nomination.
I'm running because he's unfit. Somebody needs to step up. And there needs to be an alternative. The country is sick of this guy's tantrum.
That was Walsh on ABC's This Week. Walsh joins former Massachusetts Governor Bill Weld, who's also running against Trump. On the Democratic side, recently saw Jay Inslee, John Hickenlooper, and Seth Moulton all drop out of the crowded field. Tom Holbrook is a distinguished professor and Wilder Crane Professor of Government at UW-Milwaukee. Tom, thanks a lot for joining us today.
I'm glad to be with you.
Well, as we check in on the latest, let's start on the Republican side. There is a category of Republicans, a lot of the leading intellectuals in the party over the last bunch of years, looking for a candidate to challenge Donald Trump in the primaries. From what we see in the polls, though, does President Trump look vulnerable to a primary challenge?
No, he doesn't. I think there's room there for somebody to come in and, you know, maybe get 10-15% of the vote. But challenging an incumbent president within his own party almost always ends up in failure. I mean, about the best case we've seen recently was maybe Pat Buchanan back in 92 or Ted Kennedy in 1980. These are tough things to do, especially because many of these same party insiders did all they could to stop Donald Trump from getting the nomination in the first place, and they weren't successful then.
And for that Never Trump movement, looking for a prominent candidate to challenge Donald Trump, Joe Walsh and Bill Weld, probably not that candidate?
Well, it's interesting because they're very different candidates,
sure.
Right? I mean, Bill Weld's a fairly liberal, in Republican terms, candidate, and Walsh is pretty conservative. You know, neither of them have the sort of national status that, you know, the Never Trumpers might be looking for. Maybe somebody more along the lines of John Kasich or Mitt Romney or, oh, I don't know, maybe Jeff Flake, somebody like that might do a somewhat better. But there, you know, there is this hardcore base of the, you know, 2019, 2020 Republican Party that really, really likes Donald Trump. And it's going to be very hard to make any serious inroads into him getting the nomination. Now, having said that, it's possible, you know, to do enough damage by challenging the president within his own party to hurt him a little bit more for the general election, which is in part what some of these Republican Never Trumpers are ultimately interested in, I think, is just not to see him get reelected.
But if I'm a Republican who hopes to have a political career in the future, this may not be a way to make friends among the Republican base challenging Donald Trump.
I don't know. It's interesting because let's suppose that Donald Trump goes on in 2020 and loses the election. I don't know if he's going to or not, but let's suppose that happens. And let's suppose it's a really, really bad year for the Republican Party because of that. And some of these people who stood up and challenged the president during this time, you know, at least in terms of the party apparatus, middle of the party, they may be looked upon more favorably.
Talking to Tom Holbrook, distinguished professor of government at UW-Milwaukee, looking at some of the latest news in the 2020 presidential campaign. Switching gears for now to the Democratic side, we saw a few candidates drop out. Were you surprised by any of the candidates who have pulled out so far?
No, you know, I mean, there are so many of them. The ones who have dropped out might have made my list of the most likely. I don't know. I mean, there are so many that really don't have much of a shot at things right now that it certainly made sense for these people to drop out. It probably makes sense for others, certainly in the next couple of months, to drop out as well.
And we saw Washington Governor Jay Inslee. He had focused on climate change as the main issue for his candidacy. He had laid out a plan. He just finished laying out a plan for combating it before he dropped out of the campaign. Could a candidacy like that at least raise the profile of an issue like climate change among the remaining candidates?
Well, yeah, I mean, the one thing he did bring to the debates was his answer to almost every question got back to the issue of climate change. I think that, you know, most of the other candidates are on the same page as he is when it comes to climate change. But in the absence of his voice, it might get a little less attention during the debates. I mean, the Democrats, I think just recently this past week, decided not to hold a special debate on this topic. If Inslee were still in the race, there might be a little more pressure to do that.
What kind of constituencies within the Democratic Party do you see this crowded field racing to try to capture here?
Yeah, this is interesting. I mean, in some ways, it's very much like we've seen before, where there's kind of a centrist standard bearer for the party. In this case, it's Joe Biden, who, you know, the middle of the road rank and file Democrats recognize his name. He's got a history in the party, so they're supporting him. And then you've got the sort of more liberal wing of the party really being split between Elizabeth Warren and Bernie Sanders, and split about evenly as well, I might say. There don't seem to be really big divides in terms of sex. I mean, among the top candidates, Warren is doing somewhat better among women than among men. There don't seem to be any big racial divides yet at this point. It seems to be more a case of the liberal wing versus the more centrist wing of the party. And again, I think Biden clearly captures that centrist wing. Maybe Buttigieg picks up some of that as well. But in some ways, it's kind of a classic old Democratic primary. Where you've got, and I should say, really, this is what you see in the Republican Party normally also, where there's kind of a center conservative versus the very conservative wing of the party fighting it out in primaries.
And after that last primary between Bernie Sanders and Hillary Clinton, by the end there, there was definitely some bad blood afterwards from some supporters of Bernie Sanders. Do you think the Democratic Party can escape that this time around?
I think so. For whatever reason, and it's sometimes a little bit difficult to figure out, there was a lot of antipathy within the Democratic Party for the eventual nominee, Hillary Clinton, last time around. I don't see that among this group of candidates. I see, and I should say among the supporters for these groups of for these candidates as well. I don't see quite the same sort of thing going on. And even back when it was Clinton versus Obama, you had the same sort of dynamic. I don't see that emerging here. It's of course difficult to tell what's going to. Nobody's cast a vote yet. But sure, right. I don't see that happen. I don't see signs of that being an imminent. Outcome this time around.
Yeah, as somebody who studies elections, do we have a lot of prior cases where we have this many candidates running in a presidential primary? I know the last batch of Republicans, it was a big crew, we thought at the time,
yeah.
But this is even bigger.
Yeah, no, there was a big group of Republican candidates last time around. I mean, I was thinking back, I think it was back in 1984, there were lots of Democrats coming out. It's strange to think about it now, but about early 1983, Ronald Reagan looked really vulnerable. So lots of Democrats came out and ran. 2008, there were quite a few Republicans coming out to run then. In fact, I was checking today, about this time in 2008, it seemed almost a certainty that Rudy Giuliani was going to be the Republican nominee. So it's sort of ramped up. It's clearly ramped up this year. And part of that, I think, is a sense that the president is vulnerable, and whoever gets this nomination has a good chance to become president. And for a lot of these candidates, why not? And give it a shot. Let's see.
Talking to Tom Holbrook, government professor at UW-Milwaukee, looking at some of the latest news in the 2020 presidential race. Tom, there's a temptation, I think, a lot of times in the media to look at how candidates are doing in the latest polls. There's a temptation to complain about the media talking about all the polls. What do you have your eye on? What do you encourage your students to be watching at this stage in a political campaign?
The polls, in part. The polls have been fairly steady in a couple of ways. And one is the sort of identifying what appears to be a top tier of candidates. Biden, Warren, Sanders, And then a couple of others that might sneak in there, Harris and Buttigieg. So they've been fairly consistent in that way. But another indicator I think it's worth paying close attention to is fundraising. And those same candidates are the most successful among the fundraisers. Biden in the second quarter of this year pulled in about $22 million. Warren and Sanders around 18, 19. One thing that kind of stands out is Buttigieg pulled in about $25 million during that same quarter. So I think, you know, at least in terms of identifying that top tier of candidates, the polls have been fairly consistent. Now, having said that, I mentioned earlier that Rudy Giuliani was leading the pack by a wide margin about this time in 2008. 2012, it looked like Rick Perry was, in August of 2011, it looked like Rick Perry was clearly going to get the nomination. Hillary Clinton was up 20 points over Barack Obama in 2008. So
Scott Walker had a lot of buzz earlier in the last campaign.
Yeah, Scott Walker had a lot of buzz. Interestingly, I think in 2008, while Giuliani was in the lead, right about this time, Tommy Thompson had a real bump in the polls and was seen as one of the clearly viable candidates. So watch the polls, but be aware that they can certainly change between now and when the first votes are cast. And certainly from that point on, things can get really fluid as well.
Let's bring on a caller now at 800-642-1234. Mark is with us in Bloomer. Mark, hi.
Hey there. You know, I don't consider myself a Republican, nor do I consider myself a Democrat. I would love to see a Republican challenge, a serious Republican challenge to our current president, because I don't care if it's a Republican or a Democrat. Anything will be better than what we've got right now.
Mark, thanks a lot for the call. And that's a concern for Republicans that while Donald Trump's negatives, and there were a lot of negative views of him in the last election, they could actually come back to haunt him this time in ways that they didn't last time. Mark's an example of a case where backing that up, it sounds like.
Yeah, no. I mean, I think a lot of people share Mark's sentiment. One of the difficulties, though, is for a challenge inside the president's party to have any level of success, and by that I don't even mean winning, because I just don't see that happening. Besides the candidate, him or herself, you've got to get other party elites, and by that I mean mostly members of Congress or governors from around the country, to get behind the candidate. I mentioned Ted Kennedy had was an example of an attempt from within the president's party back in 1980. And, you know, he was more successful than most candidates have been since then. And part of his relative success was that he got other party leaders to endorse him and support him. And, you know, I just don't see, I mean, Republican members of Congress have not exhibited a real willingness to stand up to the president. So I don't see, you know, whether it's Weld or Walsh or somebody else, I don't see the party elites really trying to get behind a candidate like that.
Mark, thanks a lot for that call at 800-642-1234. Getting back to negative views of candidates, we were hearing earlier in the show, actually, Donald Trump and Hillary Clinton both had very strong negative views from the voting populace against them, and they ended up going, in many cases, with Donald Trump because they disliked Hillary Clinton more. Is that something you could see happening to whoever the eventual Democratic nominee ends up being? Or was there something special about Hillary Clinton and her long career in American politics?
No, I think Clinton was unique in many ways. And she, in some ways, it kind of reminded me of Al Gore in terms of the relationship with the general public. In that there was just something about her and something about Gore with people, broadly speaking, just didn't warm up to them. Their unfavorables, especially when they were running for office, tended to be pretty high. You know, I was looking at the Democratic candidates, and this is just among Democratic voters or prospective Democratic primary voters. One thing that kind of stands out is none of them have really high negatives within their own party. And that kind of gets back to one of the things I was talking about earlier, where I don't see the different wings of the party really sort of seething about the potential success of the other wing this time around. Some candidates are viewed more favorably than others, but there aren't a lot of really high favorables among this group of candidates. Now, that's within their own party. I'm not sure how the favorability ratings look among the general public, though.
Talking to Tom Holbrook from UW-Milwaukee, looking at the latest news in the 2020 presidential campaign. Back to your calls now. Jim is with us in Dubuque. Jim, hi.
Hi. I'm kind of disappointed to see what seems to be the same kind of thing that happened to Bernie last time around, where the DNC seems to have put their thumb on the scales against Tulsi Gabbard. As an anti-war candidate, she's not popular with the establishment. But she was the number one searched candidate after both of the first two debates. So there's obviously a lot of public interest in what she has to say, but she's sort of been blacklisted as far as media attention. They're even selecting very selectively the polls that they will use to select ones where she does not meet the criteria.
Jim, thanks a lot for the call. So Tulsi Gabbard, a representative from Hawaii, are running for president. Jim thinks she's getting an unfair deal from Democrats, Tom.
Yeah, it could be. You know, I think that she's a candidate who, especially on some foreign policy issues, the Democratic establishment is probably less interested in her being nominated than in other candidates. But, you know, I think Jim is right, though. If you look at her performance, especially in the last debate, I think a lot of people sort of thought, well, who's this? And part, one of the reasons there were so many searches for her name was because people didn't know who she was. But she had a nice, solid performance in that debate. So I'm not surprised to see that there was some increased interest in her candidacy. It also doesn't surprise me, and it shouldn't surprise anybody, that parties, Democratic or Republican parties, you know, they're interested in finding candidates who are going to win. And in 2016, they didn't see Bernie Sanders as that candidate. Hillary Clinton was the insider candidate. Insider candidates are always favored by the party, you know, whether formally or informally. So it doesn't surprise me that the Democratic establishment has favorites among this group.
Thanks for that call. Is there a case to be made from some of those outsider Democratic candidates that, hey, look, the Republicans resisted this outsider candidate? He won their primary. He ended up winning in the Electoral College.
Yeah, sure. You know, and that sort of goes under the heading of sometimes you just never know what's going to happen, right?
Fair.
Yeah, because really that seemed like the least likely possibility. And my real sense is probably heading off to watch the election returns that night. Most people in the you know, hotel suite with Donald Trump did not expect that he was going to win that either. But, you know, and I suppose that one response to that is there seems to be some buyer remorse now, sort of not just within the Republican Party, but also nationwide on that front as well.
In our last few moments, Tom, what do you think a Democrat would have to do to stand out in the next round of debates?
Well, this is, you know, this is a difficult thing to sort of figure out. You got to get airtime first. You got to find a way to get the moderators to come back to you, and whether that's sort of trying to frame things in such a way that other candidates have to answer you and then maybe drop your name and then you have to be called upon again. Got to be forceful. You have to look like you know what's going on. You know, it also, you have to kind of hope that you're put in the debate with the right combination of candidates, because Sanders and Warren, you know, they suck up a lot of time. You know, they're really good at speaking. They're very articulate. The moderators seem to want to frame things about them versus the others. By the same token, with Joe Biden also, whatever debate Biden's in, the moderators are going to sort of frame the debate as why.
And we'll have to leave it there. Thanks to Tom Holbrook from UW-Milwaukee.